couple of minutes to copy this down. Try and do it quickly. Personalism as superior to impersonalism, or bhakti essay process as being superior to jnana yoga, or any type of process which doesn't have the supreme law as the goal. So now we go on to the second section, verses 8 to 12, that is discussing the progressive stages of devotional service, different levels of advancement, and ultimately the highest level. Actually, they're being discussed in reverse. The highest level is being discussed first in chapter 8, in verse 8. Then going down to the lowest level, or even a level beneath the lowest level of devotion, a level sort of before devotion. So we see in verse 8 of chapter 12, Krishna is telling Arjuna, just fix your mind on me, just engage your intelligence in me, then you'll always live in me. Now, this is a very high level of devotional service in which the devotee is transcendental to the influence of the modes of material nature. And when Krishna is saying, just fix your mind on me, engage your intelligence in me, what we understand this to mean is that the devotee is absorbed in his or her eternal relationship with Krishna internally, and being transcendental to the influence of the modes. The devotee's not being forced to act externally. Of course, that doesn't mean that the devotee won't act externally. We understand that in such a high level of devotional service, externally the devotee is acting like the ideal regulated devotee. But internally, the devotee is engaged in his or her eternal relationship with Krishna. So this is what is implied in verse 8. Very high level. So then in verse 9, Krishna says, if you can't do that, then what should you do? Abhyasa yogena. You should practice bhakti yoga. Practice it. You have to learn about it and then put what you learn into practice and get used to it. And your mind becomes more and more fixed spiritually, fixed on Krishna. Then gradually you may come to the stage described in verse 8. So practice bhakti yoga. In other words, follow the regulative principles very nicely under the direction of the spiritual master. Always engaged in cultivating Krishna consciousness very strictly and very carefully. In other words, this is essentially what we are trying to do, actually. We're not yet qualified to simply absorb our minds in Krishna. We have to be engaged. As Prabhupada said, work now, samadhi later. Verse 8 is describing more like a state of samadhi. But we're not that qualified, so we have to very carefully and with all of our energy absorb ourselves in the practice and cultivation of devotional service according to the rules and regulations. So then, going down another step in verse 10, Krishna says, if you can't do that, if you can't follow the rules and regulations, then try to work for me. What does that mean? It means karma yoga, or more specifically, nishkam karma yoga. Simply working for Krishna. No personal interest, no personal desires to be fulfilled. Quite detached, but still not in a position where one can follow all the rules and regulations very easily. So therefore one does one's duties for Krishna. Nishkam karma yoga. then in verse 11, Krishna says, if you can't even do that, then try to do it. Try to act, giving up the results of your work. Try. Trying means you're not really able to do it, but try, and gradually you may come to be able to do it. So what is this then? Basically, this is Sakam Karma Yoga. You're trying to selflessly work for Krishna, which would be Nishkam Karma Yoga, but because you're not Nishkam, you still have many desires, personal desires. So, you can't really do that, but try. And then you'll be able to come, you'll become more detached and come to the platform of simply working, doing your duty according to Varnashram for Krishna. And then verse 12, if you can't even do that, now we're coming quite some distance down here, if you can't do that, then at least cultivate knowledge, preferably knowledge of Krishna consciousness and all these subjects described in Bhagavad Gita. Then if you cultivate enough knowledge, eventually you may come to the platform of being convinced enough to try to renounce something and try to do something for Krishna. So, it's quite interesting. Srila Prabhupada, as far as our preaching to the conditioned souls, conditioned souls, of course, are on a level where they're, generally they're, it's like an animal level, or at best some version of Karmakandiya mixed with animal or something like that. Nothing very good. So what was Srila Prabhupada's main program for them, for our trying to reach them? Book distribution. So when they get one of his books, then they can read and they can cultivate a little knowledge, and then the idea may come, oh yes, it sounds good, maybe I should try this. So Srila Prabhupada was actually applying this instruction of Krishna's here in verse 12. Very interesting point. Giving them the opportunity to cultivate knowledge, particularly knowledge of Krishna consciousness. Then, to sort of confuse things slightly, perhaps, Krishna throws in another idea in verse 12. That better than knowledge is meditation, and better than meditation is renunciation of the fruits of action. Now, if your memories are good, you'll remember that the highest level that we read about first in verse 8 was a level on which you are performing meditation. Your mind is fixed on Krishna, your intelligence is engaged in Krishna, isn't it? But here, and then the idea of renunciation of work came in, not the next level down, but the second level down. But here Krishna is saying that renunciation is better than meditation. So what is going on? Actually, Srila Prabhupada explains in the second paragraph. He basically explains, he sort of moves things around a bit, actually. Is a little mildly perplexing. But anyway, it's basically the idea which is being expressed in the second sentence of the translation. He says, there are two processes for approaching the Supreme Lord. One is gradual or indirect, and the other is direct. So devotional service or bhakti yoga is the direct process. The other method involves renouncing the fruits. Now, this is another method altogether. This is actually unrelated to any of the statements that Krishna has made in these verses that we've just been reading this morning. This is another process. So, he says you renounce, then you come to the stage of knowledge, then to the stage of meditation, then to the stage of understanding the Supersoul, and then to the stage of the Supreme Lord, which is basically what Krishna has described here. Actually, it's not precisely that, but it's basically what Krishna's described here. And our acharyas explain that this process that Krishna is talking about here, it's like a variation, it's another one of the yoga processes, like a variation on Ashtanga. And the goal, at least the immediate goal, is to meditate on the Supersoul. So when Krishna here says that better than knowledge is meditation, that meditation means meditation on the Supersoul, which actually Prabhupada also mentions here in the second paragraph. So it's another process. Then you may go on to approach the Supreme Lord, that just depends. This is another process. It's somewhat related to Ashtanga Yoga, but it's not Ashtanga Yoga as such. It's another process, which involves meditating on the Supersoul. But then, according to the verse, you renounce after the stage of meditation, or as a result of meditation. Whereas in Ashtanga Yoga, you renounce first. You give up your Nishkam Karma Yoga, having come more or less to the liberated platform, and then you can meditate and go on to Samadhi in Ashtanga Yoga. Now, I don't intend to go into this in depth at all, but I'm just making the point that this is a different process. And the meditation which is being referred to is meditation on the Supersoul. So now we can go on to the last section of chapter 12 before we begin chapter 13. This we'll just look at very briefly. Of course, now we're at the end of the second section of Bhagavad Gita, which has been dealing with devotional service. So here Krishna gives like a final summing up or a final glorification of devotional service and final instructions on the process of devotional service, particularly in the form of different instructions about different qualities that devotees should cultivate, which Krishna appreciates and which will endear them to Krishna. So I won't really go into them in depth, but there's so many nice qualities here. Not being envious, being a kind friend to all living beings, being very tolerant, being very detached, being free from happiness and distress and so on, being independent from the ordinary course of affairs in the material world, equipoised in honor, dishonor, heat, cold, and so on. And at the end of each verse, Krishna says that a devotee who has these qualities is very dear to me. So basically the idea is we can try to cultivate these qualities, recognize that they are good qualities, try and free ourselves from any, like the opposites of any of these qualities. And then particularly in the last verse of the chapter, verse 20, he says that particularly those who are fully absorbed in devotional service, they are not just dear to me, not just very dear, but he says very, very dear. So of all these qualities, the quality of being fixed in devotional service is most appreciated by Krishna. So we should cultivate that. And that is the end of chapter 12. And that brings us into chapter 13. Now we're going into the section, this last section, chapters 13 to 18, is discussing different types of knowledge. Yeah. And of course, they're being discussed in the context of how they relate to devotional service. Not just relate to, but how they're helpful. Srila Prabhupada said that religion without philosophy is sentiment like that, or fanaticism. So, even though, of course, the goal is to develop devotion for Krishna and love for Krishna, that is the goal. But in order to detach ourselves, disentangle ourselves from our entanglement in this material world, so that we can more easily approach Krishna, then at least to some extent, we have to understand these different facts about what is this world, what are the modes, what is the soul, how are all these things interacting. Otherwise you can end up sahajya, actually. Sahajya means that I think I love God, or I think I should love God, but in a way in which materialistic people, quote-unquote, love each other. In other words, there's all sorts of material contaminations in the relationship which one may artificially try to establish with God. If one remains on the material platform and doesn't become disentangled. So in order to help us, in this last section of Bhagavad Gita, starting here with chapter 13, Krishna is going to give so many pieces of important knowledge. And here we begin with the subject of nature, the enjoyer, and consciousness. Have any of you not marked yourselves present? Just at the back, I think, just pass it back, and then pass it forward. So now, if you haven't written down these six subjects and the various pieces of explanation that I put with them, do it right away and pay attention at the same time, because this is all a little complicated. This is jnana. To help bhakti, so, you know, the element of bhakti is there, but to a large extent, jnana is quite prominent. So it helps to have at least a slightly philosophical mind. So Arjuna begins in verse 1 by asking Krishna about these six subject matters. What is Prakriti? What is Purusha? What is the field of activities? Who is the knower? What is the knowledge? Not just what is the knowledge, but what is also the process of getting the knowledge? And what is that thing, or those things, which are to be known? Everyone mark themselves present? No? Yes? No? Yes? Okay, thank you. So, six subjects. Important subjects. And they're quite clearly described in this chapter. And at the end, to encourage us, Krishna says that if you can understand these six things and how they interact, then you can advance very nicely in devotional service. You can become liberated. So it's very nice to know these things. So first of all, let's see. Well, first of all, I'll read a little bit from the purport of verse 1 and 2. Right at the end of the purport, we're about seven or eight lines up, Prabhupada gives an introduction. Now, starting with the 13th chapter, how the living entity comes into contact with material nature and how he is delivered by the Supreme Lord through different methods of fruitive activities, cultivation of knowledge, and discharge of devotional service, these things are explained. Although the living entity is completely different from the material body, he somehow becomes related to the material body. This is also explained. So now, in the second, so that's the first section, verse 1. Then the second section is starting from verse 2. And Krishna answers the third, fourth, and fifth questions, which means, what is Kshetra? What is the field? What is Kshetragya? Or who or what is the knower? And what is Jnana? What is it that is to be known? And how do you know it? Jnana means what you're meant to know and how you get to know it, the process. both things. So that's described now from verse 2 to verse 7. So a fairly simple answer is given to 3 and 4. What is Kshetra and what is Kshetrajna? In verse 2, Krishna says that this body is the field. Quite simple. Now we're going to go into it a little more deeply when we get to verse 7, but for the time being, we can say that the body is the field. And one who knows the body is the knower. Now as it works out, that's the soul and super soul. In verse 4, Krishna goes on to elaborate a little bit as far as the knower is concerned. That I'm also the knower. So it's not just the soul, it's the super soul. And he answers question 5, what is knowledge? To understand the field and the knower, that is knowledge. Now there's also a little bit more to it than that, but that's a start. Try and keep track of these points. It's quite interesting if you keep track of each point as it comes. If you don't, I can almost guarantee you'll find it rather bewildering. So we have a simple definition of the field, the knower, and the knowledge. There's more to come, but that's a start in all regards. Now, in verse 4, Krishna makes some extra points about, first of all, about the field. Now, I've noted these down here, that we are to know how it's constituted, what its changes are, and what it comes from where it is produced. That's there also, you can see. So those things are going to be described also. Then as far as the knower is concerned, the Kshetrajna, we're also going to find out not just who he is, but what his influences are, how he works, how he operates, how he affects the field. And knower, bear in mind, this means the soul and super soul. So, the influences of both the soul and super soul are going to be explained in this chapter. Verse 5. Krishna says that knowledge, the jnana, the knowledge of the field and the knower, has been described elaborately in the Vedas, particularly in Vedanta Sutra. I don't know if any of you are familiar with Vedanta Sutra. It's an extremely difficult book to get into. I wouldn't necessarily recommend that you try, even, unless you find this chapter very easy to follow, which you may not, because it goes into all these things in like the most fantastic detail about Purusha Prakriti, and it's a deep analysis of material nature, and then it points us also in the direction of spiritual nature. So he says, Krishna says, if you want to know more, then read Vedanta Sutra. So if you want to know more, read Vedanta Sutra. We're just here getting like an overview. But in order to take us a little bit more into it, Krishna then speaks verses 6 and 7. This is an elaboration, simple elaboration, on the field. The field. So, now it begins, 5 great elements. False ego intelligence, the unmanifested, the 10 senses, the mind, and then the 5 sense objects. Those are the 24 items of Sankhya. And it's particularly those 24 items, along with Purusha, which are analyzed, at least to a greater extent, in Vedanta Sutra. A lot of Vedanta Sutra is dedicated to analyzing these things. In other words, this is basically a description of material nature, or at least our bodies, any bodies that are material. The five great elements, that's earth, water, fire, air, and ether, then false ego and intelligence, the unmanifested, that means pradhan. Those of you who are a little familiar with Srimad Bhagavatam would know that pradhan means the unmanifested state of the three modes. If you want to get more information about it, get the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, look up in the index at the back, and there's a clear description of pradhan there. But the basic idea is that the unmanifested, or pradhan, means the three modes, but they're not yet active, they're not actually in action or manifest yet. Then the ten senses, these actually, just while we're at it, these are all described in the purport. The five great elements they're referred to, if you look at lines 3 and 4 of the purport, then the unmanifested is referred to in the 5th and 6th lines, and then down in the second paragraph. You could make notes of these perhaps, because we're going to actually ask you about these things in the test. Then the ten senses, it's a lot of senses. The ten senses are described starting with the, 7th line down, 6th line down. There are 5 knowledge acquiring senses, the eyes, ears, nose, tongue and skin. Then there are 5 working senses, voice, legs, hands, anus, and genitals. And there's also the mind. That is then described just immediately after these 10 senses are described in the purport. Then there are 5 sense objects. If you look down, it's about halfway down that first paragraph, it describes them. Then there are 5 objects of the senses: smell, taste, form, touch, and sound. So did you all get that? Just make a note of where these things are in the purport, and then read over it. The 5 great elements, they're described in the 3rd and 4th lines of the paragraph. False ego and intelligence, I assume you know what they are. The unmanifested is described in the 5th and 6th lines of the first paragraph, plus in the second paragraph, like it's the second half of the second paragraph. The 10 senses are described starting in the 6th line of the first paragraph. And the mind is referred to immediately following the description of the 10 senses. 5 knowledge acquiring senses, 5 working senses. Then the 5 sense objects. That's just after the mind, about halfway down the first paragraph. So it's all there. Then the aggregate, if you follow on a little further in the verse, desire, hatred, happiness, and distress. Well, those things arise basically out of the interactions that go on in the field, more than anything. Or at least like the Purusha, one of the Purushas, the soul, being wrongly situated in the field. desire, hatred, happiness, distress, then the aggregate is referred to. The aggregate is described also in the first paragraph, just after